This is Herb Montgomery, Director of Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast. Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free, even our seminars that we do in various venues. So if you'd like to help us keep doing what we do, I'll tell you how you can do that at the end of this podcast. For now, it's our hope that you will just simply enjoy this podcast as our gift to you. This week, our title is Jesus, the Meek, and the Golden Rule. Our feature text is going to be Matthew 5, verse 5, where Jesus says, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." As we look at the blessings of Matthew 5 this week, what I want us to realize is that Jesus here does not say that any state that he mentions is an intrinsic blessing. What he's saying is that if you have any of these experiences, the ones that Jesus is describing, poverty, mourning, persecution, that you'll be particularly blessed by the changes Jesus came to make. The first blessing, the blessed are the poor, is a great example. It's not a blessing to be poor. No one strives and works hard so that one day they can be in poverty. Jesus was saying that if the present arrangement of this world has left you poor, you are blessed because of the changes that I've come to make, that they're in your favor. And this is also true, I believe, of the statement we're looking at this week, which is blessed are the meek. Now, Webster defines meek, Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines meek as having or showing a quiet and gentle nature, not wanting to fight or argue with other people. It can also be defined as easily imposed on or submissive. And there's no intrinsic blessing in being this way and being meek in the present world structure. In fact, meekness is considered a disadvantage in this world where everyone's looking out for number one, trying to get ahead and looking out for themselves. The world is presently arranged in such a way that it doesn't reward the meek. It steamrolls over them. And I experienced this multiple times during my travels this summer. The first was driving in Los Angeles. Driving in LA is very different from driving in Lewisburg. In Lewisburg, we look out for each other on the road. I mean, there's a little bit more traffic these days, and Lewisburg's beginning to get larger. But to a large degree, the old way of driving that's been here since I was a kid is still in place. Even cautious drivers, They're let in. We kind of have this unspoken rule here that if there's a line of traffic and someone's trying to get in where two lanes merge, it's just a given. It's in every other one type of driving. Every other car lets the next car in. So if you drive with any degree of meekness, though, in LA, just let me say that it's not the same as in Lewisburg. To the degree that you drive with meekness in Los Angeles, that's the degree to which you're going to get run over. A second example is that on one of our flights, a large muscular man threw a fit in order to intimidate a flight attendant into giving him the seat that he wanted. And it actually worked. As he passed by my seat, I noticed on a tattoo on his arm that was in large lettering, "I trust no one." And so he was just putting this out for the whole world to see, not to mess with him. I don't think we define him and his disposition or his personality as being meek. In this world, which is a world based on competition rather than cooperation, it's not the meek who are blessed, but those who know how to play the game with the greatest skill. Even in something as simple as getting on an airplane, we don't look after the meek. Each passenger already has their seat assignment, and we're all going to be taking off and arriving together at the same time. Nobody can get ahead, and yet some people need to be first on the plane to the degree that they'll roll over others to do so. Jesus isn't telling people in his day to be meek. He's telling those who are listening that the world he had come to create, the world he was creating, would be a blessing even to those who were presently meek. And by contrast with the present world, that is not a blessing to people who are meek. Imagine for a moment, imagine a world where everyone, and I mean everyone, treats another simply the way they would like to be treated. Matthew's Jesus points to that kind of a world using the language of his own Jewish tradition. In Matthew 7:12, it says, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets." Jesus is sharing here actually a universal truth, and this is how it sounds in the language of other cultures. From ancient China, Confucius said, never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself. And I'm going to list them here. You can check out the e-site this week for the actual references. I'm not going to go through the time to give you all the detailed references here, but they're posted online on our website. You can go and copy and paste them or look them up if you'd like. But from ancient Egypt, this is from a late Egyptian papyrus. It says that which you hate to be done to you, do not do to another. And ancient Greece, the philosophers taught, do not do to others that which angers you when they do it to you. Ancient Buddhism, hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Ancient Judaism, at least 200 years before Jesus, we find this teaching, do to no one what you yourself dislike. Again, in ancient Judaism, we find, recognize that your neighbor feels as you do, and keep in mind your own dislikes. Again, Judaism, that which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow. That is the whole Torah. The rest is explanation. Go and learn. Ancient Hinduism teaches one should never do that to another which one regards as injurious to one's own self. This, in brief, is the rule of Dharma. Other behavior is due to selfish desires. So this universal truth that Jesus is teaching in Matthew and Luke's gospel, I believe, contains the building blocks of a whole new world. And if we follow it to its furthest conclusion, we find it's a world that takes care even of the meek. And that's what we're looking at this week. So follow closely. Jesus modeled this new world for us in his practice of a shared table. This is Luke 15, verse 1. "Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling, saying, 'This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" In Luke 9:10, it says, "When the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, 'Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?'" In Luke 5, verse 30, "The Pharisees and their scribes were complaining to his disciples, saying, 'Why do you eat with and drink with tax collectors and sinners?'" In Luke 7, 33 and 34, it says, "For John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine, and you say, 'He has a demon.' The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Look, a glutton and a drunkard and a friend of tax collectors and sinners.'" So remember that Jesus, first and foremost, he was not a Christian. At best, Jesus was a Jew. And in first century Judaism, unlike in our time and culture, the label sinner, it was not a universal term. It referred only to those within the covenant community who were thought to be living out of harmony with the Torah. Jesus chose a table that included those who, at best, were politically and religiously marginalized. At worst, they were excluded by their culture status quo. Jesus modeled a table that, to a certain degree, was non-homogeneous. There were differences among the table. Think of Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector. In other passages in the canonical Gospels, Jesus is clear that his table must also be non-kyriarchical. And if you're not aware of the definition of kyriarchy, I'll put a link for that in our East Side as well. You can check that out. But notice John 15:15. Jesus says, "I do not call you servants any longer, because the servant does not know what the master is doing, but I have called you friends." In Luke 22:25-26, it says, "But he said to them, 'The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. but not so with you. In Matthew 20, 25 through 28, or 26, we find in Matthew's gospel, Jesus called them to him and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, and it will not be so among you. Look at Mark 10, 42 through 43, even in Mark's gospel, Mark has this teaching. So Jesus called them and said to them, you know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as their rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them, but it is not so among you. In John 13, 12, it says, after he had washed their feet, he had put on his robe and had returned to the table. He said to them, do you know what I have done to you? In other words, do you understand what I'm doing? But you call me Lord, and yet I've come down and washed your feet. So he modeled an inclusive, a non-homogenous, and a non-hierarchical shared table, and he invited us to sit with him there. I believe that Jesus understood that exclusivity creates a world where certain voices and perspectives are not heard. It's a world that doesn't fully take into account how others would desire to be treated and how we would wish to be treated if we were in their position. I believe that Jesus understood that homogeneity creates a world that's unsafe for anyone who is different or unlike those seated at the table. So to the degree that someone is not at the table, to that same degree, those present will create an unsafe world. Ultimately, homogeneity leads to exclusion, and exclusion leads to extinction. And Jesus understood that hierarchies, where one human exercises authority over another human, that those structures deny the image of God within both parties. It creates a subjugation that leads to oppression. And I see this truth modeled for us in the Eucharist. We honor the memory of all who have been excluded, subjugated, and exterminated in the past in the communion service. These were the ones that Jesus also stood in solidarity with. And that solidarity cost him his life at the hands of the status quo. He too, like them, became broken and spilled out. And we choose, when we engage in the Eucharist as a community, we choose in the name of Jesus and in the face of this world's present structures to begin shaping our community in the form of a shared meal, in the form of a shared table. So regardless of gender, race, orientation, sex, education, economic achievement, everyone must be invited to the non-hierarchical, non-homogeneous table. And if we would only choose to learn to follow Jesus and sit around this table with others, especially those who are not like us, not like ourselves, we could embrace a world devoid of oppression, devoid of subjugation and destructive violence. And I've not always understood this myself. There was a time in my life where I was seeking to be in environments where everyone was like me. But I'm continuously learning. And today I see that if we would choose to live in the manner of a shared table, this would create a world respectfully and compassionately shared by and with all of us, even the meek. In that world, even the meek are blessed, for they too, according to Jesus, will inherit the earth. Remember, it's many voices, one shared table, one new world. Heart group application this week. What are some of the ways that your heart group can learn to more deeply to lean into the practice of the universal truth of treating others the way that you'd like to be treated. List these together, not on your own, but as a community, come together and list these, at least 10 of them, list 10 ways that you could more deeply practice this. And then number two, discuss what it's going to take to begin putting these into practice. And then number three, what challenges does your heart group, and be honest about these, what challenges does your heart group face right now that this process would significantly help? And actually sit down and list them as a group. It's my hope that as you do this, your heart will, with mine, continue to be liberated, continue to be healed, and as our ministry is fond of saying, that your heart would be renewed. Till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love each one of you. I'll see you next week. Thank you once again for listening to this podcast. As I said earlier, Renewed Heart Ministries is a not-for-profit organization that is dedicated to helping people explore and understand the teachings of Jesus. Everything we do here is for free. We don't make any money off of our seminars that we do in various local venues, and all of our resources are provided for free online. I have a hard time philosophically charging people money for that which I think Jesus gave to humanity for free. And so we take Jesus' words very seriously. Freely you've received, freely give. Even anything that we receive above our annual budget, we don't keep. We like to pass that on to other charities who are making a difference with the poor in this world. So if you'd like to support Renewed Heart Ministries and the work that we're doing in helping others encounter Jesus, please go to renewedheartministries.com. You can either you can go to renewedheartministries.com/donate, or if you go to just the website, you can click in the upper right the link there that says donate. You can make a one-time gift or become one of our monthly contributors. Every little bit helps. And for those of you who are already supporting us, with all of our hearts, we want to take this opportunity to say thank you. You're the one that's enabling us to share Jesus far and wide all around the globe. Thank you to each one of you for listening once again. As we like to say here at Renewed Heart Ministries, till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Thank each one of you so much.